This is a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat with guest Daphne Lee Martin. I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com.
So we got really good news. Our record went to college radio. We're charting number 20 top added in the country right now for the week. It's kind of exciting.
Number 20!
And we're like St. Vincent and Drive By Truckers, and you know, a bunch of those records are out this week as well for ads at radio. So we've already had 13 top 5 ads. That's just in the first 2 days of a 6-week campaign, so I'm pretty psyched.
That is reason to be psyched, yes.
Love college radio.
Yeah.
You guys are awesome.
Have you heard any of the new Truckers yet?
I'm sorry?
Have you heard any of the new Truckers yet, by the way?
The new what?
Drive By Truckers.
I haven't heard it yet, no.
Okay, neither have I. I need to real soon. We'll find out. I didn't actually request a copy, but I'm going to get one soon. I was hoping to find somebody. Did you guys get the limited edition vinyl in?
For Drive By Truckers?
Yeah, they...
I don't know. I'll have to check with their drive-in.
Totally understand. No, I was just wondering because I was going to try and find it yesterday, and I just didn't get time to get out and look for it.
It's like, I get...
Yeah.
But...
We stopped at a record store around the corner. Records Per Minute, is that where they had copies, yes. I think, on the shelf there.
Okay.
So it's definitely kicking around.
Yeah. Well, I'll check it out soon.
Store.
Yeah, kick drum.
There are some great record stores here in Columbus. It's true. I mean, it's a college town. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's hipsters galore, so. They've got the market. I actually come down here to buy records for, like, frequently. Some of the places in Cleveland don't carry the crazy stuff that I want on vinyl. But anyway, for the portion of that conversation that continues, why don't we just go ahead and start? So we are in Columbus, just prior to a show at the Rumba Cafe with Daphne Lee Martin.
Yee-hoo!
Yeah, that was the lady herself, and her band is also joining us. So just so we know who everybody is, why don't we start with you and just go right around this way.
Say your name and what you... Well, Daphne Lee Martin.
That's the name of the ads, you know? Who knows if that's you?
I know, right? No, that's my ads, my actual name. I signed that on text. And I'm a singer and songwriter for the band.
Okay.
David Keith, drums.
I'm Isaac Young, I play keys.
Brad Bensko, I play bass and backup vocals sometimes,
Sometimes. Do you forget your parts and just, like, miss them entirely? Or
you just be like... Just, you know, whatever it moves me.
Okay, I gotcha.
I'm very Quaker about it.
Exactly.
However it comes out, you know, that's the way it was meant to be, right?
As long as it's always beautiful, which,
you
know,
said it.
It always is.
Okay, well, that is what counts. And the reason that you are here in lovely Columbus is because you're promoting your brand new album. And the name of that is?
Frost.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And I've heard it. It's a lot of fun, and we'll get into some specifics later on it. But I do want to talk about your concept for that album and the album that preceded it, which was Moxie.
Right.
Because they're kind of twin pair, as you've said. Sort of showing two different sides to one personality, or however you want to put it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and how that came about and how the records relate to each other?
Well, I'm a Gemini, so, you know, walking contradiction is it's pretty much just a part of my game in general. But I, you know, I've been inspired by a lot of different things over a long time. And the more life experience I get and the more I write songs, the more I realize how much truth there is sometimes in opposing forces and how necessary each of those forces is to the other's survival, you know, or destruction or rebirth or any of those things. So, you know, when I was dating someone when I lived in New York back in the 90s, and he said that I had two qualities that he really liked. Frost and moxie. And by moxie, it's pretty obvious. It means chutzpah, you know, the, you know, spunk and verve. And what he meant by frost was the ability to keep calm under pressure, to keep you cool no matter what goes down. And I it stuck with me, you know, and I don't want to say how many years ago that was. I mean, the 90s, it was a long time. You know, just it stuck with me for a long time, and I always wanted to write around those two themes, those two ideas. So I set out with, you know, the first incarnation of my band set out songwriting around 2005, and a lot of the songs on Frost come from that 2005-2006 era of time, and I just built up a collection of songs that reflected this sort of, you know, sweet, sticky, caring, loving, generous, you know, approach to love and life, but then also this sort of dark side, this sort of crazy, wild, intense, passionate side that usually ends tragically, you know, those kinds of things. And a lot of my songwriting fell into one or the other of those two categories. And so Moxie got all the bad girl songs, and Frost got all the good girl songs.
Okay. That's a slightly judgmental way to put it, maybe.
Maybe.
I mean,
yeah. But sometimes by being judgmental and really criticizing, in my case, myself, mm-hmm. through these songs, you know, I've been able to grow as a person an awful lot by looking real hard into a mirror.
I gotcha. Well, I think that's what is kind of interesting about the set, because usually you get a blend on any given album of different tones and different moods and all that. And because you set out so deliberately to split them, you know, both albums in their own way are kind of a punch, I feel. Like, the dark side on Moxie is the dark side. You know, and then you, like, flip a switch, and...
But this is me, too.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and it's kind of cool to have that much of a just sharp edge on two albums and to sort of put them out together. So I thought that was a real cool concept.
Thanks.
But... most people, I think, would probably lead with the good. So I'm wondering, why did you start with the bad?
Inadvertently. I actually had all the tracking done for the good record first, and the songs that are on this good record were written before the songs on Moxie were. But it, through a bunch of different circumstances, working with a few different producers, and then converting my files, frankly, from an old, really terrible laptop PC to, like, a new fancy-schmancy Apple Logic program, I ended up corrupting a bunch of the files, and I had to start over. Talk about a lesson learned. But, yeah, so I was able to rescue a lot of the files for Moxie. And when I was playing those songs with the producer that I ended up working with, he was very inspired by them, so we attacked those first, and then... you know, inadvertently, we did the project backwards. But that's life for you.
Well, that's kind of fitting, though.
Yeah. So you're right, you're spot on.
Okay.
I did it wrong.
No, you're being judgmental again. You did it differently than I think most other people would. But that's not wrong.
Yeah, you just got to roll with it.
I did. Well, I mean, part of my own philosophy, and I think I can hear, you know, part of yours musically, too, is just... things will work out, whatever, you'll get there, you know. Things are kind of how they're supposed to be, so...
yeah, there are no rules, you know? It just is what it is. It grows organically and often out of our control, so...
okay.
There's more than one way to block a box.
That's true.
Well, since you brought it up, you were telling me a little while ago, but if you don't mind, you guys could all chime in and explain... so you are calling this the Block the Box Tour.
Don't block the box tour.
Block the box.
Yeah, I can't. why don't you tell everybody how that came about and contribute as much of the insanity?
It came about perfectly innocently, like most really good dirty jokes. it just happened. I was screaming at some idiot that, you know, got into an intersection, and the light turned red, and everyone was waiting on him, you know, and I was like, oh, don't block the box. Well, my guitar player, Matt Lindauer, is sitting next to me, he just starts cracking up, and he's like, what a metaphor. So, it grew legs, and we've been running with it ever since. When Isaac over there, he made a beautiful graphic for it, so...
Oh, I want to ask you about that. What was your inspiration for the owl and the graphic? I'm curious.
No idea. Just like, you know,
it's
one
got
of those
an
things.
Owl in there.
Yeah, well, owls are, you know, ever
well,
seen
owls
and
are
wise.
Right?
Yeah, and
yeah.
You've always got to have
it was
an owl.
Just about the way owls stare, right? You know, that sense of like, right, exactly.
the owl is being judgmental now.
Yeah. Maybe it is the judgmental owl. Maybe the owl's blocking the box. Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
in any case,
it just kind of went from there.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Well, you know, and the first track on Frost, Little Birds, the entire theme of that song is you do your work and you let everybody else be, you know, be productive at theirs. You know, it was about someone that really tore me down as a person because he felt that any success that I had in my career detracted from his own. And I felt that to be like, just a pathetic way to do life, you know? Everyone should be helping each other out. This is a tough enough business to be in as it is without tearing each other down. And, you know, that is, in a lot of ways, that's what Don't Block the Box means to me. Sure, you know,
sure.
You know, don't it's like, don't be a cock blocker, don't, you know, be a wingman. Maybe that's where maybe that's where the owl comes in. Everybody be everybody else's wingman. We should be helping each other out, not stop
exactly
each other
from
doing what we do.
So did you guys just like feel the pressure in the room going up with all the love that was just, you know, it was just like this warm glow just as covered the Rumba Cafe green room
with a good wholesome message attached.
Yeah.
Don't block the box, kids.
Oh, damn hippies.
It'll serve you well.
You damn hippies.
Alright. So to bring it back a little bit, you're actually talking a little bit before about the response that you've gotten charts-wise.
Yes.
To the new album, which has only been out, 2 weeks? Okay.
2 days.
Yeah, that's right. I got it way early this time.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
That's because you're so special and I love you.
Is that it? Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I'm very lovable.
You are.
So, gotta do what you gotta do, you know? I mean,
I hope your listeners know.
You guys haven't gotten
a
chance yet. You'll love it soon enough. Before the night's over, I'm sure. All
right. First night on tour.
I know, man.
I
lucky.
Get loved already.
We are not blocking the box, brother.
Yeah.
Wow. See?
That's a sad comment.
Now the pressure goes up.
Uh-oh.
So anyway, what I was getting at is, as far as the reception that you've gotten from the professional community, what are you finding out from your fans, and what are you hearing back from the people that went to your opening show this weekend?
You know, it's funny. I you know, a lot of people, when they start out, you know, small, independent, like I have, grassroots thing is about friends and family supporting you whether they love your music or not at the beginning, and then you start to develop this crowd of people that just love the art that you're making. And it's just been in the last, you know, the last, since Moxie came out, the last year, that I've noticed the greater split between the number of people that are my friends supporting my career and the number of people that are really significantly buying every record I put out and coming to shows and supporting in other ways. And, you know, about half of my online fan base, not even half of my online fan base is people I know, which is pretty cool to feel. And we've done really well, too. We really believe very much in college radio, and we sent Moxie out for college radio. We ended up with 45 ads across the country and charted in the top 200. Frost has only been at radio for 2 days now. We've already had 13 top 5 ads, and we're charting at number 20 in ads for CMJ right now. So we're pretty happy to see that kind of growth take place in 1 year. That's huge for us. And we're so
and for those of you who can't see, by the way, she's just like bubbling over right now.
I love you guys, and I love college radio, man. Freeform stuff is the best. Let people play, you know, what they love. Don't just stick with that commercial stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that actually kind of dovetails nicely with what I want to talk about next, which is, how would you describe your style, first of all? just so people can get a basic idea.
I call myself a songwriter. You know, I don't like putting labels on it, because if I shift gears again, I've already had a country band. I won awards for writing country songs, and you know, I performed out with that, and that's cool. I'm using a lot of the same material now in a pop act. The songs stand on their own, so it's really hard to put labels on them without sounding contrived, you know, without it sounding like something it wants to be and not what it actually is. So it's hard. People are calling it cabaret pop, if you will, because it definitely has some theatrical vibes to it. You know, and the stage show is very energetic, and, you know, thanks to these guys out there rocking it.
Super energy over there right now. You guys are just...
But the music itself, within the music, there are country-oriented melodies. There are pop-oriented melodies and forms. There's, you know, we have a gypsy song. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, Molotov is definitely that feel. We have all kinds of different sounds mixed in, so to put a tag on it is tough.
Okay. Well, I think for me, over these two albums combined, the elements that I felt most strongly were obviously a lot of jazziness, which really tied it together, I think, because in Moxie, it was that sort of frantic kind of jazzy feel, you know, and it was just a lot of, like, minor chord spooky kind of feeling, like, you know, and all that, and you switch over on Frost to the sort of bright sort of jazz feel. So to me, that's what underpins these. But then you got a lot of other stuff, like you say, you know, mixed in. And I guess your combination of the country and the jazz and the indie kind of pop and the sort of a little bit of funk and all that makes it kind of an exciting stage show. That's just my feeling on it. I don't
know. Cool, thank you. I'm excited for you to see this lineup of guys. You met David the last time we were through on tour, but you know, I've upped my game quite a bit by being able to bring Isaac Young on, who's won several awards for his jazz ensemble, and is just a fantastic piano player, and a saxophone player, and you know, music teacher, and all of those things. You host a festival, you do all kinds of stuff. You're the guy. But also being able to bring back my bass player from the country band Raise the Rent, Brad Bensko, on the road with me again, who has literally been at my side since a lot of these songs were written, so it's kind of an extraordinary thing to tie together 7-8 years worth of work, you know, and bring that crowd together like that, so it's cool.
I see. You noticed that too, huh? We're haunted apparently.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah,
I was,
yeah.
The door just suddenly crept open and you're all like... So all the good stuff happens at the rumba, as they say. So this is the beginning of your tour. You played some local shows and are just made a big, long drive straight from Connecticut out to Columbus. But what's the rest of the trek look like for you guys? And are they markets that you've played before? Are there some new ones you're breaking into? Anything like that?
A mix of the two. We are going down to Louisville tomorrow. That'll be a new market for us, but we have some friends down there. We're really excited to break into that scene. I've heard so many good things about the music scene down there. And then we're headed to Nashville, where we have a lot of friends, but again, have never played. Huntsville, Alabama, where we have played and had an enormously warm reception the last time we were down there. We'll be doing that show with Amy McCarley. Then we're off to Baton Rouge. The whole reason that we're going to Baton Rouge, again, is College Radio. The station down there supported us so much with the last record that we wanted to go down and pay those folks a visit. And then New Orleans, just because. Who doesn't want to go to New Orleans?
Seriously, I mean, if you're going to be down there, gotta go to New Orleans.
That's true.
So where did you book into Nashville, by the way? Because you were...
We are going to be playing at the Springwater Supper Club, which I hear is a little bit divey, but is apparently a rite of passage for a lot of songwriters to play there, and I'm really looking forward to it. My friend Samantha Harlow.
So you're finally going
to
be a woman? Is that?
I know, right? At 39. No, it'll be great, but my friend Samantha Harlow, who's actually just had a video released through American Songwriter magazine, she's going to be hosting that show with us as her guest. Really excited for that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So for our friends down there, check that shit out.
Yeah. It'll be on the 6th.
Okay. But this is kind of a little bit of a special show for you because you're actually originally from Ohio. So this is kind of a bit of a homecoming for you, right?
Yeah. I grew up about an hour and a half away from here, so between Zanesville and Athens. Yeah,
okay.
I'm not usually expecting to see a few folks here tonight that I haven't seen since junior high school, other than on Facebook. So I'm pretty thrilled for that, actually.
Isn't social media a wonderful thing?
It's miraculous. Everyone whines about it, but it can be used for such good,
yeah.
not just evil.
Well, I mean, pretty much everything electronic. I don't know if you guys, agree with this or not, but you look at the music industry, for instance, it's the same thing. Like, technology has so many great applications, and it has so many applications that make it kind of tough. So, with all things in life, as with the music industry, I think because of the change in technology, like, we're all just trying to figure out what our place really is, Like, both in society and the music industry, right? What do I know? I just write about the craziness that you guys get to actually go through, though. That's the armchair musician in me, I guess.
That's the good shit.
Indeed. So, are you expecting any of your, not just the people that you kind of lost touch with, but any of your good friends who always come to see you tonight as well? Is this where most of them are coming out, or?
Well, we'll see. It's tough. I haven't really been back to Ohio since the 90s, so it's going to be interesting to see, what happens, who makes it out. It's a weeknight, too, and a lot of folks decided not to go down the path I went, and they went and had children and stuff, so that, there's that school in the morning thing that they have to think about that I don't have to think about. So I'm not going to,
I totally know that feeling.
I'm not going to hold them to anything, but it would sure be magical to see a bunch of those folks, yeah.
Gotcha. I don't know about any of you guys, but I have that same experience so much because I'm also 30 front row, as I said. I'm not going to say which end of the front row, or I don't know. You can put me up. Figure it out, but that's another beautiful thing about Facebook and social media. You can spy on people, so if you want to know my birthday,
just go right on there.
Just look at my profile. it's so weird to still, like, when you're kind of an artist type, be a musician or be a writer or be whatever it is you're being, and living the life that you lived 10 years ago, and then everyone else that you know is like, has a house, has a job title, has a bunch of kids, it's all that. You're just like, what happened to all of you?
Well, it's funny. Like, three of us in this room own our own homes, actually. And Dave, you could probably speak to that better than anybody.
Yeah.
You're the oldest of the bunch, and you're the most regularly touring musician.
That's true, yeah. I think you have to pick your battles, I guess, And for me, three of us own houses and don't have kids, so I don't know what that says.
We also have massively supportive spouses that
dig
our music.
Yeah, that's definitely important as well. But it's, at least for me, it just came down to, like, I could actually have a house full of be smart. It was scary and weird for sure. Like, oh my god, I'm gonna be one of those people. Am I still gonna be me? Am I gonna, like, change into, like, a
one of those people who actually has
person?
To pay his bills?
Yeah. But it's been great.
So I was gonna go a different direction. We'll get back there in a second, but that actually does make me want to ask then. So how does your time on the road, do you guys feel compared with the time at home as musicians, I guess, you know? What are your, I guess, I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this. I guess, what are your emotions comparatively when you're on the road compared to at home? Like, you go into two different modes, kind of the frost boxing thing, like, amped up for 2 weeks and then get home and lay back? Like, is that the way you guys do it or what?
I definitely have a lot of adrenaline going on tour, but being on the road, it makes you more susceptible to sickness, it makes you more tired. You're broke, of course. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's not, it's not so glamorous. You're not out there to party, you're out there to work. And for me, it's almost like going on the road, I get healthier in a way than I would be at home, because at home, you know, I could just sit there and watch TV if I wanted to. I could eat whatever I wanted to. I can, you know. But on the road, it's a very focused, task-oriented kind of a process, at least for me.
I love being on the road. It's my favorite thing in the whole world.
It feels great.
Yep. It's, and I'm the same as you. I feel typically healthier afterwards when I get home. Even though the schedule is crazy and all that, it seems like, I don't know, the longest I've ever been out at one clip was 6 weeks, and I could have stayed out another 6 weeks easily. It felt fantastic. So, but, you know, I think that's sort of atypical even among touring musicians, even that I've met. Like, a lot of people, after a few weeks, they're like, yeah, this is fun, but, you know, I kind of want to get home, hang out with my people and all that stuff.
It is fun being on the road with people you really like, though.
Yeah,
I mean, we've spent more time laughing together than anything so far, so.
Well, I mean, with Don't Block the Box as the basis of the entire tour, of course you have.
You're trying to keep it fun, you know?
I got you. Yeah, well, I'm just, like you said, like, I know, from my perspective, seeing everybody who comes through all the time, like, musicians, amazingly, just, they have all just have different ways to adapt, and I find it hysterical, that, you know, I see different people who take it completely different ways, and, like, I totally go with the I would rather be on the road crowd. I mean, I hate being sedentary. If I could, I would buy an RV tomorrow and just go on a permanent book tour. Like, just, you know, figure out a way to just get some novels published and never stop.
There you go.
So that's what I'm working on.
Do
so
it.
But whatever your mindset is.
We have friends all over the country. We can hook you up with places to crash. Although you'll be in an RV.
That's the idea, exactly, right? Right?
Park it.
Well, actually, I was just telling these guys, if you don't mind me dropping somebody else's name real quick. The very first person who ever did one of these Burning River Fireside Chat interviews with us was a woman named Kelly McRae. And she and her husband, Matt, have been on the road for 3 straight years as of this weekend. They bought a VW camper van and just went out and haven't stopped. So they've had a couple breaks here and there, but I think that is awesome. I just want to commend that. So for our readers who have heard Kelly, damn, girl.
Damn.
The Grahams do that as well, a couple out of Nashville. Awesome. Yeah, they've been on the road for a long time now, too. They just gave up their house and just decided to do this.
Right, right. Cool. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's so many different modes of people and so many different modes of musicians. You can figure out a way you can buy your house and stay there. You can buy a van and just live it.
Yeah.
So, I guess whatever works for you. So, the line that I was going to before we got to the personal stuff was actually another question about technology that we were talking about earlier. The reason that I immediately fell in love with you, if you don't mind me saying, the second that we met, is because literally within 5 minutes of meeting, you had given me 2 vinyl records. That is probably the closest to marriage I've ever come. So,
I am the worst merchandiser ever.
Yeah, well, no, seriously, like, I obviously I get free music all the time,
right,
like,
yeah,
whether it be digital or CDs or whatever, but you're the only person who's ever just been like, you have a turntable? Like, of course I fucking do. Hold on. And just, bam, vinyl.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, that, well, Max spoke very highly of you, and I adore them. So anyone that they love, I'm going to love instantly. And anybody that has a turntable, yeah, spin that stuff. Get it out there. Enjoy it. It's awesome. That's so great of you. I am glad that you listened to them. That's awesome.
Indeed. Well, I mean, for people who... I don't know if you guys want to jump in on this, too, but for people who have a love of music, you know, so much of it for me is just multiplied on vinyl compared to any other form. So it's a beautiful thing. And if people out there don't have the opportunity to have gotten into vinyl yet, they really, really freaking need to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we hit shuffle all the time on our iPhones. We never listen to an album as an album. Mm-hmm. And albums are a statement. Start to finish, they're meant to be listened to. And you're forced to, right? You're not going to sit there and skip tracks by moving the needle.
If you think about a photo album, you don't open a photo album to look at one picture. You look at a collection of pictures that have been put together for a reason. You know, that's the same with songs.
Right.
And I think that vinyl sounds a lot better. We should probably ask our resident educated recording engineer more about that. But.
Well, I find vinyl akin to going to a library to research something as opposed to Googling it. Like, you put more effort into it, and I feel like in some ways you get more out of it. It's more of a ritual, and you know, you have the larger cover art and stuff like that. And I, for one, happen to like the sound better.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, especially nowadays, everything becoming more digitized, I think it's helped the vinyl industry a lot more, because people, if they're going to buy something in mechanical form, you know, why not go for something that has larger album art and, you know, something that you can have fun with and spin around and stuff like that, as opposed to a CD, you know, so...
And most of them come with the download.
Yeah,
anyway.
Absolutely.
So you're going to get what you're going to listen to, right?
Yeah.
That's why I think a lot of people have so much success with vinyl on the road, too. Because at the point that they're coming up to you at a merch table after they've just heard you play, at least 90% of what they want is a souvenir.
Mm-hmm.
And 10% of it is the music. Exactly!
Yeah, absolutely.
And you get the band to sign and all that. I think that's one of the reasons why it plays so well on the road, because it's actually something you can hold rather than download card.
And people like it even if they don't have a turntable. They make 12-inch frames. People put that on their walls. That's
absolutely
how much they value the artwork alone. It's a really cool thing.
But I do have to say, all my life, my favorite smell in the world has been that opening of an old vinyl and that paper. The first time, like, when I was playing my parents' records, you know, my very first records, basically, it just struck me. And ever since.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Especially when you, like, go digging and you find something, like, nice and juicy, like some, you know, Woody Guthrie from the 40s on a Folkways label, and you're opening it up and... You know, you don't have any idea who the last person who listened to this might have been. It might have been last year, or it might have been 40 years ago. It's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. But, you know something about that, too, because we should mention, among your musical endeavors, it's not just being a singer-songwriter, but also you're on the selling side.
Yeah, I have an independent vinyl record shop called The Telegraph, and we run a small label out of there. We promote a bunch of regional New England acts, and it's a fun, cool way of engaging the music industry on a different level. You know, it's really fun to do the creative side of things. It's great to write, it's great to play, you know, it's both terrifying and rewarding all at once, but when you really think about, you know, what... If you want music to be your career, a career is how you make a living. And how you make a living is by making money. And you have to think of what you're offering to people as a commodity. You have to think of what you're offering people as having value. And for me, having the brick-and-mortar record store helps ground what I'm trying to do as an artist in a lot of ways, because it really impresses upon me the reality of the situation. If I can't sell it, it's cool that I make it, but, you know, I can't go out and press vinyl if I'm not going to be able to sell vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get less than 250 made at a clip. that's a lot of records to sell, you know, when you're an independent
artist. But if you keep
giving
them to me, that's one less. So you're 249,
no,
right?
True.
So,
yeah. It's true. You know, but you really do have to think of it that way. And having a brick-and-mortar store has helped on a lot of other levels, too. For one, I get to sit there and listen to and engage music all day long as my day job. You know, not just as a, hey, you know, I like music and I'm a musician. But it's no, I listen to all the new stuff that's coming out. I talk with record labels every day. I talk with artists every day. I put on shows in the record store. I engage the media all the time as a product of that job, which is very different from what I do as an artist. And being able to look at the business in a more rounded way, it helps me think more sympathetically to the people I'm asking for favors. Like, hey, please come to my show. Well, why should I come to your show? I can think of the reasons why now. Why should I write about your show in my blog? Or why should I, you know, that when I go and approach people with things that I would like them to do, I'm able to look at them as a business person and say, okay, well, here's the value in it. Here's what we're trying to accomplish together. This is teamwork. So that's what it really does for me in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's cool we live in a college town, too. And it's really magical to see, you know, a 16, 17-year-old kid or a 20-year-old kid come into the record store and walk out with a Nat King Cole record, a Talib Kweli record, and an LCD Sound System record in one bag. It's cool to see that, to be able to watch them spin stuff on the listening station and learn about music. That's magic to me.
Very cool. Very cool. So, like you said, as a business person, you also have other concerns, too, besides the warm, fuzzy feelings and the artistic stuff. So I'm just wondering what your sort of take is on independent record stores right now and what their role is and, you know, how the future is going to fare with them.
Well, I still think that we're, in a lot of ways, the tastemakers. You know, if, like I said, that 16 or that 20-year-old kid can come into my record store and experience something for the first time on vinyl, if they can listen to it and hear it and get a chance to get familiar with it, they're going to give other things a chance than they would have based on what they're being sold on a YouTube ad or, you know, what Facebook posts are popping up or what their friends are talking about. You know, they're going to get a different experience with it. I think that's invaluable to a lot of people. And I just think that, again, people value the physical form. Digital is so transitory, and it feels cheaper somehow than having something significant like vinyl. And, you know, like, you look at the electronic book industry, it had the big swell, and then people realized that they really just like the feel of paper in their hands, you know, and now independent bookstores are back on the rise again because people like that physical, visceral, you know, interaction with their media. And I think that that's true of record stores as well. I think it's important.
Well, I think you basically just described the culture war right there. No, I mean, it seriously, I think it is a perfect example of, like, how our society has moved on in a lot of ways. This completely digital world, this completely different way of looking at things than we've ever had as a society. And then some people are realizing some parts of that aren't so great. They're like, forming this little counterculture. Like,
right.
It's,
well,
a very specific niche of people.
Right. Some people don't mind being spoon-fed and they'll take what they're given. But you'll never kill human curiosity. That will to discover something.
Oh, yes,
something.
I will.
Not the royal you.
One way or another, I will.
Wow.
That damn curiosity.
That's scary. No, but, yeah, it's so innate in us. And record stores are this beautiful way of doing it, you know? Like, that sense of discovery.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that I'm sure you certainly provide that really makes a difference, I think, is, again, the ability to have the human contacts versus going on iTunes and listening to a sample and being like, oh, okay. Like, you actually, you know who your record store owner is or your bookstore owner is, and you can go in and they'll remember the last 5 things that you bought. And they can say much better than the Apple Genius program or Pandora or whatever, hey, you need
you're
to listen to
like
this.
It.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I find that true. Even at the record store myself, and when I'm booking acts, you know, I do a little bit of helping booking around town in New London, and we have in-store performances at the Telegraph as well. The likelihood of you getting a shot at one of my shows is a lot higher if I've heard from you, heard about you from one of my friends.
Mm.
And that word of mouth thing, that interaction thing is absolutely crucial. If you just mail me a press kit, maybe I'll get to it. It's not a priority, but when someone says, hey, you gotta check this out, of course I'm gonna listen to it. You know, it's a much more important, compelling case.
Right. Which I also feel another sort of subculture of this anti-insanity movement, if you want to call it that, are the house concerts. And I think that's the same reason why house concerts are so successful now. Because, you know, you trust the person who's throwing it or who's hosting it, you know? And
even if you don't know the artist.
Right. And if he says it's good, he's your buddy. He's been right every time before.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go and listen to this person. So it's a whole new way to be introduced to stuff, too. So it's very analogous.
Coming out of roots music, that's always been the purpose of music for me. It's a social affair. The musician in a community is every bit as important as the doctor or the lawyer or the, you know, people that provide a service to other people. We provide comfort, truth, a way of looking at the world. We provide relief. If someone had a really terrible day at work and they want to come out to the bar and dance and have beer and hang out with their friends, it's me up there singing and helping them have that good time, helping them get through their day. That's the service that you offer through live music, and I think that job is important too in the community just as much as any other profession is. And has been for eternity. Tribal cultures, the musicians were considered gods. Very important members of the communities.
So you guys... Not gods, I hate to break it. No offense, you're all very nice people and all that.
There's no god complexes in here, it's just that, yeah, it's important that people have music in their lives.
I want to be a god.
Think about how many albums are in your iTunes right now?
I don't even want to think about that, actually.
Music's important.
It is. Well, and again, I think, for me, so much of what I'm listening to is stuff that I'm listening to think about reviewing it or something like that. And so I go through these phases where I will listen to an album 50 or 100 times even and then move on to the next one. You know, and like, or I'm building it up over a couple months maybe, or a month, or however long I have the album before the review is going to get done. But then there's just like this intensity, and then, okay, it's work, it's done, move along. Whereas with something physical, like we were saying, the records or whatever, you can get this totally different, like, I'm just going to put on this record and zen out.
Yep.
You know, this is music that I want to listen to. It's not like the headphones in your ears and the, okay, oh, I can compare this to this, I can compare that to that, and all that. So that's the physical side of it. And then, you know, like we were saying, the relationship between people. Like, I have the same thing. I know artists from a slightly different perspective than you guys probably do, you know, being out on the road with them, but I see so many people come through, and somebody I respect who's a musician tells me this is the person you need to look at, then I believe that. Every single time, again.
Thank you, Tony Schaefer.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, the Womacks, you know, they don't tell me about too many people, but when they tell me about somebody, I know I'm going to love them. So again, say, Tony, set your ass down, and like, okay, done. But it's the same kind of thing, you know, and I think, you know, no matter what we do with technology and all that bullshit, the human connection is never going to go out of style.
Damn right.
That was a lot of words, actually. It wasn't before. Anyway, we have had a lot of words, and I do want to get this wrapped up, but just before we do, I want to bring it back home and talk a little bit about the music on the new album. You guys are out here playing it, and it's the beginning of the tour, but you're getting to know the songs a lot better, I'm sure. And you, as the writer, could you guys just tell us a tiny bit about a couple of the individual songs and what people can expect on Frost?
Which song?
whatever you guys find interesting to yourselves.
I don't know. One of my favorites is Little Birds. That was the most challenging song, just because I guess you sequence the drums, or Bill sequenced the drums, so...
Yeah,
yeah,
it was a mix of...
The drum part wasn't originally played
by humans, so it's this way of using polyrhythms, and, you know, I come from a conservatory background, so of course I think of it with an academic mind, so I'm trying to analyze how to count it, and I'm trying to think, like, all right, how do I do this? And then I had to step beside myself and just feel it. It was a great experience to then just take away all the preconceived notions of, like, there's beat one, there's beat two, here's a downbeat, this is changing time signatures, just feel it. And being able to, you know, take parts that were originally on synthesizers and now put them on an organ and reharmonize some of the piano parts onto a Fender Rhodes. So, like, changing the initial outline and kind of putting my own spin on it. But it's been, you know, it was a formidable challenge, but a fun one at that.
Same thing with the drums during those
lives.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I had to, you know, kind of make my body move in unnatural ways to get this drum part out and, like, make it feel natural, kind of. And same thing, it was an awesome, awesome challenge to do that. Anything that can, like, because, you know, I'm sure this is true of any instrument, you get to these little plateaus where you're just kind of doing the same stuff or variations of a thing, but you're not really necessarily growing. And something like that can help, like, shake you a little bit, kind of shake your tree a little bit and get some other shit to fall out. Oops, sorry. Bad language.
Oh, dude, you can fucking swear as much as you want on my
podcast.
You
can't do that on college radio.
Indeed. We've seen this is the beauty of the internet. Like you're saying, some technology is good because...
That's right.
You guys get to listen to me swear all the time, and you get to listen to me swear in my writing all the time. Your
the
fans
whole,
know, sir.
Like, technology and, you know, the human interaction and everything. I think it's just a matter of, like, trying to figure out best way to have both of them at the same time, because you can have both. You know, you can have a record and be doing a podcast at the same time. And that's why it's like...
Well, I can't have a record right now.
Oh, come
I mean,
on.
Not on my own. I can't put out a record.
We gotta put a guitar in front of you and see what happens.
No.
Can't means won't.
There's an organ down there. It's beautiful. Once you put your fingers on it, you're gonna fall in love. You know? Don't block the box. That's
yeah,
right.
That's
what I'll stick to my part in this game, and you stick to yours.
That sounds good.
So then, just a comment from you, Daphne. I guess your perspective as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Which couple songs are most important for people, and what can they expect from a couple of them individually?
Well, just, you know, it's more about the feel of the record in general. I just want people to come away with the feeling that Love has this really beautiful, soft side, that people can be real with each other and generous and genuine with each other. You know, that, like, in the song The Night We Fell in Love, it's a series of questions. Will you remember how I smiled? Will you remember how you held me? Will you, you know, these sort of questions that... You know, you think to yourself, well, yeah, sure, there's this crazy madness of first love that, you know, makes you act insane and it makes you scared for your life of everything that's coming down the pike. But then there's also that feeling of, yeah, you know what, this is awesome, and it's been awesome for the last 10 years, and it's going to be awesome in 25 years from now. So I guess that's what I really want the record to come away to, leaving people feeling, is that, you know... Hang in there. It's beautiful. Life is beautiful. Love is amazing. That's all.
Okay. Okay.
I know. I'm a corn dog, aren't I?
It's just, well, no. I mean, it goes back to actually how we started this, though. It's just so funny to see the difference in demeanor. What you're talking about right now compared to Moxie. Because there is that other side, too. And you're not...
It's true.
You've totally tapped into
and
the Frost side
the
right
stage,
now.
The stage show is this... Because we jump around between the two records. I had originally thought that what we could do with the stage show is I would actually have a costume change. It's like I would wear like layered clothes so that I could, you know, be Moxie wearing all black and then tear that off and be wearing all white underneath it or something when the Frost record... But it just doesn't flow that way. The songs actually segue into each other quite nicely the way that they are, and the emotional push and pull that you feel through the set I think is better than if we had separated them live.
Yeah, like real life. Sorry.
Talking about separated, it feels like time to wrap this up.
Poor Daphne says anything else stupid.
The That was not stupid, lady.
See, you're being judgmental again.
No.
Stop calling yourself bad. Stop calling yourself good. Stop.
I'm just gonna make myself an owl now.
There you go. But I do want to let everybody know once again. If you haven't gotten the chance to check out Daphne's music yet, you definitely need to. The No Surf review will come out shortly. But in the meantime, they can find you where online?
DaphneLeeMartin.com.
Okay. So head on over there and check out their tour schedule, and hopefully you can catch them on the road and buy some of that vinyl and CD straight out of the hands of the lady herself. Mm-hmm. So once again, guys, thank you so much for joining me. Good luck on the rest of the tour. And this is Jason D. Diesel Hammond, your host. This has been another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats. See y'all.
Bye, everybody.
This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.